Welcome to a fresh episode of Bank On It, and today I'm excited to be joined by my guest, Johan Peens, also known as JP. JP, thank you so much for joining us.
It's a pleasure. Thanks.
Tell us about the cool stuff that you do, JP.
Cool stuff is financial planning and how to make the life easier for people out there that doesn't necessarily have it or get it, and how we can help them sort their lives out.
And that's the crux of what we're going to be chatting about today: simplifying finance, and more especially, adulting 101.
Right. Look forward to it.
I look forward to it too. So, you early on in your career, you faced with this complete black box of decisions. It's just confusing. You don't know where to start. First car, first house, planning for maybe a wedding, paying off student loans, first paycheck. Just everything. It's just chaos, right? Someone who's starting out, how can we simplify those decisions? Where do you even start when you're faced with all this information, all these noise, all these big ticket purchases? Take me through it.
To make it as basic and simple as possible, number one step in any financial plan, any consideration of a financial plan, you know, we have people out there talking about retirement annuities, pension funds, you know, retiring, etc. The number one step, the most simplified step, build emergency funding. That should be bucket number one.
Rainy day. Say for, like, keep cash away for a rainy day.
Right? You want liquidity.
Okay.
Simple as that.
That's it. So before you even get started on big ticket purchases, make sure you have a little bit of cash set aside.
And that is exactly it. You don't want to pay for short-term debt or short-term expenses using long-term investments. So the idea is counterproductive, if you think about it, counterintuitive to what you do. But the first step is make sure you've got emergency funding. That emergency funding can help you when those big unexpected moments happen. And you can make payment of that. And even if you don't use that money ever in your life, it means you've got discretionary money at retirement, which again means that you have flexibility and options.
Now, JP, you've been a certified financial planner for almost 20 years, and you've seen many different case studies of people who have made bad personal finance decisions. And you help them recover and you put together a game plan. What are some of the biggest financial mistakes you see people making? The most common two or three ones? And how can the people who are watching this, our audience, avoid making those mistakes?
So, three simple things to look for. First off, you want to understand the product itself. So understand the product. What's the interest rate? How does it work?
So getting into the wrong type of financial product.
Correct.
Okay.
So you don't want to get into the wrong financial product. You definitely want to focus on fees. So fees is a big part of that.
So expensive.
So expensive or cheap, both ways. You want to make sure that you focus on the cost and then what service you get or what benefits you get for that cost or the fee that you're putting out there. And number three is probably the performance. So you want to look at how that benefit or that investment or, you know, your little bit of money that you've got left in the bank is performing, and you want to keep your eye on that.
Got you. So let's simplify that with a real world example. I walk into a car dealership and I see a really nice car that I like.
Yes.
And the salesperson just gives me this fat contract and says, sign it. What are some of the things I should be looking for when buying my first car?
So number one is the interest rate. You want to keep a keen eye on the interest rate.
What is that? Let's explain what an interest rate is, right, basically.
So interest rate is what the bank will charge you for looking after that vehicle. They usually add on a bit of money on that, so or a percentage onto that. So you would find that your normal rate would be 7.5%. If we add on what the banks charge you additionally, generally you get an additional fee. So you want to make sure that you go and scope that and understand what the interest amount is that you're going to pay over that term.
So the cost of taking out that loan.
Correct.
Right? So if you take out a loan for 100,000 rands and the interest rate is 12%, 12,000 rand gets paid over and above that 100,000 rand.
100%.
Right? Got you.
100%. And that means that you pay that interest first before you pay off your capital amount that you owe them.
Got you. Okay, so you look at the interest rate. Take me through the time period of a loan and how long you have to pay it back.
Correct. So you want to look at that time horizon, as we call it, both important in investing as well as when you loan money. So in terms of wanting to buy. You want to understand how long that period is. The longer the period, maybe the shorter the amount of money that you pay back, but the higher the interest rate becomes.
Gotcha.
Or more the rand value becomes. So you want to make sure that you keep an eye on the period. And where you can make it as short as possible understand if you do take a longer period, what is that longer period going to cost you?
Got you. And finally, the purchase value.
Correct. So the purchase value, also understand the purchase value and what you can add to the purchase value and even a deposit. So there again becomes important, that big ticket item of owning your first car. Maybe put a deposit together. Before you start or before you ask for the loan, that can always assist you in negotiating those rates.
So JP, would you say the absolute worst case scenario is buying a super expensive vehicle at a very high interest rate with a loan repayment period that's very long?
Yes, I would agree with you.
So you would want to do the opposite, ideally?
100%. You would want to do the opposite. Find something more suited for your budget.
Mm-hmm.
So an easy way to start there is put a budget together, understand my income and expenses, and then I will have a little bit of cash flow left over for the month. That mm-hmm. can give you more or less an idea of how much I can afford in paying a car.
Mm-hmm.
Also, what you want to consider in buying that car, the purchase price, is all kinds of additional charges. So there'll be a charge on the policy itself. There will be additional costs like insurance and maintenance of the car. So you want to take that into consideration. Then obviously put some money together. The deposit can help you out.
So, you know, our show is powered by Capitec. And they do such an incredible job of simplifying finance and breaking down, you know, a whole set of products, services, etc., that are easy to understand for consumers. The one thing that is slightly complex, developing a budget, because there's so many moving parts, right? And how do you have income, expenditure, things that are moving all the time, because your expenses are constantly moving and your income may be moving as well. Take me through the basic steps in building a super basic budget, and what does that mean for everyone that's watching this?
So off the bat, Kashik, you want to understand your cash flow. So what do I have available at the end of the month? One of the biggest questions we get when we do financial planning, and right from the start, this is usually the question that we get is, you know, I've got all this money left over at the end of the month, but I don't. And that's because they don't budget properly and they allocate money to something that they don't know they're allocating money to. Mm. So we call it the bucket system. So you always want to understand buckets of where things fall into to make it really simple. Always pay yourself first.
Mm.
So any budget, you should think of it in that light. It's to pay yourself first. Simple budgeting is take your income, understand how much I'm bringing in. You want to do a simplified tax calculation. You can get guys out there that can do the really heavy tax lifting for you and understand what that tax implication is going to be. But you want to understand how much tax you pay, and you want to understand your expenses. And yes, they are moving target, as we call it, but that moving target is probably adjusted once a year.
Mm.
So you want to adjust that budget once a year, sit down with the wife or the husband and have a look at it, or with the partner, or if it's just by yourself, you know, make sure. If you're with someone, make sure you do it together. It doesn't help having separate and you don't understand what the money flow is. And once you put that budget together, you'll understand how much income I'm getting, how much expenses I'm paying, and how much do I have left over in the month. If I have zero or negative, obviously I'm overspending, and there needs to be a change in my psychology to understand why this is happening. What am I spending my money on?
Mm.
If it's positive, great. Then it means you've got some extra money lying around and probably makes it easier for you to exercise some choices in terms of wanting to buy big ticket items, or saving for big ticket items, or investing, or whatever it might be.
Now, there's many different strategies and ways to draw up and develop a budget. So let's simplify that and break it down for everyone that's watching and thinking, okay, I know my income, I know my expenses. And now I don't like the fact that I'm in a budget shortfall. I don't have any money at the end of the month, right?
Yes.
The big question is, how do I allocate that? Right. And one strategy is called 50-30-20.
Yes.
So it's 5-3-2.
Yes.
Take us through how 50-30-20 works and how you can actually practice that when drawing up your budget.
So the 50-30-20 rule is about allocating to your needs, your wants, and then your investments.
Okay.
Okay. So you want to look at around 20%, which is your investment needs, okay, as we call it. That might have gone up over the years. So again, it's not a set type of rules. You know, it's a rule of thumb, 50-30-20. And it will obviously change depending on the person. But 20% is allocated towards your investment. So yeah, you want to think of things like your retirement annuity, your discretionary after-tax monies, investing in stocks, you know, investing in bonds, whatever your flavor is and wherever you're investing, you want to take that 20% and allocate it. If you have a pension fund at work, great, there's a part of the allocation already. Remember, emergency fund. Okay, we always need an allocation to emergency. It never stops. The third 30%, the three, as we call it, is for your wants. Okay, so yeah, we start looking at things like entertainment. So, you know, having a braai on the weekend, sitting with the mates, watching some good footy, whatever it might be, whatever my flavor is. Again, going to the opera. I want to also enjoy my life. So we need to allocate some parts of our money for enjoyment. You know, we get the frugality and having to be frugal and then, you know, you know, watch every penny. But you also need to enjoy yourself. If you don't enjoy your money, it becomes counterproductive to what we're actually trying to do. And then 50% goes towards your needs. So here we think of things like transport or a car, if I have owned my own vehicle, rent, if I rent a place, or bond, if I own a place, school fees, my insurances, you know, all the other things, DSTV, Netflix, those type of things, you know, you can consider under that. But in general, that 50% would be my need. So I need to take care of these things, my groceries, my medical aid, my school, my car, you know, my house. Simple as that. 50-30-20.
JP, you so often see that 30%, the wants, that kind of creeps up, right? That becomes a much bigger percentage of our disposable incomes because there's so many things out there that we can keep buying and keep acquiring and just keep cluttering ourselves with. And then we get into credit and we get into debt, etc. How do you manage debt? Let's simplify this. If I'm watching this right now and I'm thinking to myself, I have this huge loan and it's suffocating me, or I have a ton of credit card debt or a personal loan, whatever it is, and every single month I just can't seem to get on top of it. Let's talk strategies that are super practical for people. One strategy is using the snowball method or other methods. Talk me through some of these strategies that you commonly use as a certified financial planner to help people get out of debt.
Most interestingly, Kashik, most people, when they get into contact with us, is when they are in debt. Mm-hmm. So that's when the penny drops usually and they understand now they, you know, in some kind of trouble. So there's numerous ways of, you know, addressing debt. Two of the most common ones that I like to use is, as you mentioned, the snowball effect.
Yeah.
I think there's also the avalanche effect. Okay. So what the basic difference between the two is one is based on the higher interest rate. The other one is based on the lowest amount, okay, rand amount of debt that I owe.
Okay.
So let's start with the one with the lowest rand amount, okay?
Let's simplify. Let's use examples, right? So we've got two loans.
Yes.
One loan is a 10,000 rand loan.
Yes. And the other one, I've got credit card debt of 50. Okay, let's use those.
50,000.
50,000.
Okay, gotcha.
So I've got a short-term personal loan of 10,000. I've got 50,000 in credit. Okay, gotcha. Or credit card debt. So let's start with amounts. In terms of amounts, I want to then target the lowest amount first. So I'll target the 10,000 and I'll pay that off as quickly as possible. Okay. Once that is paid off, now usually people don't have any disposable debt, so they are a disposable income. They don't have extra money to satisfy the debt or pump more money into it to pay it off quicker. Okay. So usually this one might take a bit longer than usual. It's about importance here is to keep knocking on their door and keeping them away. Honest and yep. You know, keep chiseling away at the debt. That 10,000 you'll be paying off. If possible, get another job, get another income stream, something of that sort, where you can allocate some more money to it. It will happen even faster than to pay off the debt. Once that debt is paid off, you want to take whatever you've been paying there, add it to the other debt. So let's say you were paying off 500 Rand a month there. Yep. And I want to take that 500 Rand and allocate it additionally to what debt I was paying on the credit card. So now let's say I was paying 1,000 Rand on my credit card. Now I'm paying 1,500 a month on my credit card. Immediately you can see how that speeds up the payment of the debt. So now I'm putting in an extra 500 Rand a month. And you can actually go and calculate. There's calculators all over the show. And you can calculate how quickly that will then help you pay off. So instead of paying it off in 36 months, for example, you can now pay it off in 24 months, if you understand what I'm saying, because I'm not putting extra money in. The other one to look at is the high percentage in debt. So let's say the credit card is costing me
30%.
30%.
Yeah.
And my personal loan is costing me 20%. Okay. So based on that, I want to tackle the one with the highest interest rate, kill that off as quickly as possible, because that interest rate is what kills me in repaying the term. Mm. Okay. So now I want to pay off that credit card as quickly as possible. Once the credit card is paid off, same simplicity happens. You take whatever I've been paying off there, allocate it to this other debt that I've been paying, and then carry on paying that debt off. So now I'm focusing on paying off the debt with the highest interest, kill that off, move on to the next debt with the highest interest, and kill that off.
Got you. So you've got basically develop a strategy and stick to it.
Correct.
And the two strategies that you've explained now are the snowball method and the avalanche method. So those are two very practical ways anyone that's suffocating in debt can look at solving that problem.
100%. Something else to just bear in mind, Kashik, when we're having that discussion, immediately when you have that type of debt where you are being suffocated is very bad for anyone. Mm. So you want to almost focus exclusively on the debt. Okay.
Got you.
So people are very interested in, I've still got to invest for my children. I've still got to invest for myself. I still need this, RAs, etc. Don't worry about any of that. It's important. Don't get me wrong. It's super important from a financial planning perspective. But killing off your debt is number one priority. From there, emergency fund. And then from there, we look at further putting any other requirements or products in place where a person needs it for, you know, achieving a certain objective.
And I'm so glad you brought that up, JP, because in terms of the personal finance questions you see floating around, particularly on social media, it's so common for people to ask, where should I invest? What stocks should I buy? Is this a good ETF? Except, as you pointed out, a priority question needs to be, how much debt do I have? 100%. Should I be paying off my credit card?
100%.
Because a high interest credit card that's at 25 or 30% is costing you more in terms of cash flow than the yield on any good investment, right? Statistically, 100%. Most of the time.
I mean, if you look at investments over the long term, you know, we talk inflation plus 5%. You will never be able to, you know, get to a 20, 30%. There'll be years that you shoot out the lights, you know, and you get that type of return. But in general, 100% spot on. That debt will suffocate you and kill you at that interest rate because it's just way higher than any return that you can make on an investment. Just, you know, focus on paying that off. Focus on building emergency funding. You're solving two problems. You're solving, firstly, the debt issue that you've potentially got. And if you don't have a debt issue, fantastic. That's a great start. You're ahead of probably 90% of South Africans. And number two is then that you want to look at building that emergency so I don't have to go and look for debt again. That if something happens, I'm prepared for it. Okay. People get upset when they have to use the emergency fund, but that's what it's there for. Okay. And then we start building it again. But that allocation of your money, that's why the budgeting is so important. So I understand how much I have available or not.
Yeah.
And if I do have something available, it doesn't mean everything needs to go into a retirement annuity. It doesn't mean everything must go into a unit trust. It doesn't mean everything must go into emergency funding. But you have certain steps that needs to be satisfied so we can move on to the next one. It doesn't help starting at the end trying to work your way backwards.
I hear you. You know, one of the big crises in personal finance, particularly in South Africa, is so many people are not able to retire with enough money, or they have to be forced to work much longer than 65, or they simply don't have enough cash at all when they get to that point. A big specialty of yours is structuring retirement annuities, retirement planning, financial planning for the elderly. Based on what you see every single day, talk us through what it's like when people don't have enough cash for retirement. Like, I'm watching this right now. How do I make sure I'm in a good space when it's time for me to enjoy my retirement and never work again?
So you're touching a very nervy point.
Yep.
In financial planning, you know, and it's something that...
Does it keep you up at night?
It does, because, okay, you know, we've got this... This fact that's bandied around in the industry that 6% of South Africans retire comfortably. Okay. What is comfortable depends.
Yeah.
But that shows you. Okay. Recently, we had a research paper come out, and that research paper showed that most South Africans don't retire at age 65. They actually retire at age 80.
What?
So at age 65, they've only got around 25% of their capital need at retirement. So that means, you know, you need another 50%. We say you need about 75% to retire comfortably. Again, comfortable is subject to the person.
Sure. Yeah.
You know, my comfortable is different to your comfortable, to any other person's comfortable. But that's an important discussion to have very early on, so you know what your retirement looks like, right? Or how much I need to start putting away to think about that retirement. That's a very difficult concept for people to understand, the 75%, because what 75% of what? Okay,
yeah.
So to make it simple, to put a value on it, a lump sum value, it's about 15 or 20 times your salary.
Okay.
Okay, so
15 to 20 times your last salary
would be what you would need to retire comfortably.
Okay.
So you asked me, in terms of your question, what things or what do we see happen when people don't have enough? Okay, so now putting those statistics out, you know, no, most people don't have enough. It's a change in lifestyle, Kashik. So those are, you basically have two levers you can pull in your life for saving for old age, okay, yeah, or retirement. I think retirement's a concept that's going. You know, it's more going to be for old age. Most people carry on working because they can't afford to retire. That is probably the biggest issue that we see out there. People don't save enough. So that's lever number one. Start saving as soon as possible. Even if it's, you know, the guys talk about 100 Rand, 500 Rand, whatever it might be, start saving. Emergency savings count. Discretionary savings count. It's not just the retirement annuity that counts for old age. You can use your unit trusts and your tax-free savings accounts and your emergency funding if you don't use it. That bucket can give you discretionary or off-the-tax monies at retirement, which totally changes the game, gives you flexibility. But those are the options. You either pull this lever, which is contributions. I put money away for old age, you know, in various different vehicles. Or you're going to get to retirement and it's going to be too late and you're going to have to adjust your lifestyle. So to put it simple, Most people, according to research that was done and seeing some of the guys out there, statistics, you're looking at around 20% to 30, I think it was a 37.1%, what we call net replacement ratio. What is a net replacement ratio to make it simple?
Mm.
How much do I have for retirement? Am I on course for my retirement?
Yeah.
So if I'm earning 10,000 and my net replacement ratio is 20%, that means I'll have 2,000 rand at retirement. So that means effectively I'm moving from earning 10,000 to 2,000.
Wow.
Can you see the lifestyle change? You're either going to go to family and ask them to help you, or you're going to have to live with family, or you're going to become destitute. But most people, or you're going to have a government grant, you're going to have to apply for a grant of some sort. But that's what people are. One of the top firms in South Africa when it comes to pension funds, about 37.1%.
Wow.
So that means for every 10,000, I'm earning 3,700.
That's a huge drop off.
That is a massive drop off.
Yeah.
One of the issues because of that was how people access monies at pension funds over their lifetimes. These are the old rules in terms of the old pension fund rules. Obviously, the two-part system has changed that. So you cannot access retirement funding monies anymore. But at the end of the day, that shows you how neglected people, or how people neglect that equation. We would rather put our hands in, or our heads in the sand, or cover our eyes and not look at it.
I'm not going to get old.
Yeah.
I'll deal with it later.
And the thing is that they always say to you is, but I'm going to die in any case. You know, it doesn't matter. You know, I'll die before I retire. And my question that I always ask the guys are, what if you don't?
Yeah.
So I'd rather be prepared for retirement. And if I die, I can at least leave it to my beneficiaries, you know, whoever they might be, my kids, my wife, whoever.
Mm-hmm.
Then not be prepared, and then I do get there, and then I have nothing. Yep. You know, it doesn't make the concept behind it doesn't make sense. But that's how people think about it. They ignore it, and then they wake up to it when they get to around 50.
Yeah,
and then people all start scrambling. And effectively, what you've done is we speak again about that time frame.
Mm.
So your time horizon has now shortened from like 40 years to 20. Hence, you only have 20 years to save. You don't have enough time. And this is why we see the retirement age go to 80, because now people effectively only start saving at 40, putting money away for, you know, the old age at 40. That means you're going to work till you're about 80.
Buddy. JP, you raise such a good point, because you talked about this, I'm here for a good time, not a long time type culture, right? This instantaneous gratification.
And yes.
Social media has fueled that in a big way, where you're constantly seeing versions of success that are very deceptive. You want to own everything right now because you feel like everyone else is doing well, and you benchmark your success and your reality to other people's reality, which, looking at the statistics, isn't even real, right? It's credit card fueled, it's personal loans, it's reckless spending, it's stealing from retirement, your future, to live now. How dangerous is it to be living right now, like living in the moment and trying to unplug from the social media culture we're in, where it's like spend, 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 and actually saying, I'm playing the long game. It's difficult now, but in the future, it's going to pay off for me.
It's that old age concept of keeping up with the Joneses.
Yeah.
You know, we look over the mirror, over the wall at our neighbor, and we see the new Benz in the in the garage, you know, or the new big screen TV or whatever it might be. And people do have instant gratification. It's a very difficult concept, and I think it's getting more difficult if you look at younger people. You know, having kids myself, I look at the very young generation, and you can see almost the instant gratification. So there I'm trying to teach my kids again, you know, what does it mean to have dry powder, or to have that money in the bank, you know, and being ready for whatever. If you want to buy something down the line, you know, if I want a fridge, if I want a TV, if I want to buy couches, you know, something like that. How important it is to put some money away, save up for it, and then when the time is right, I can go and buy it. So either it's on a special or whatever it might be, or I have enough money to just go and buy it rather than taking up credit to go and feel the desire of having that item. obviously some items, you know, you can't get away from it and you need some assistance from a loan or something. We're talking vehicles, you know, houses.
Big ticket purchases.
Correct. Yeah. Okay. But in terms of, you know, those shorter term things, people...
Consumption stuff. Correct. PS5. Can I just 100%, take on a loan to buy a PlayStation?
100%. Yeah. And that's where it's at, you know. Even we look at weddings, we look at... and those are big ticket items.
And they get expensive.
100%. Like, and people go and take personal loans to do a wedding, you know, and impress people that you're going to see once and probably never again.
Yeah.
You know, and it doesn't make sense. And people don't want to understand it because they live that social life, that social, that Instagram,
they look for
TikTok.
That validation.
Want that validation. People must see me. People must accept that, you know, I'm the best, I'm the greatest, you know, everything. And that's how those people get caught up with it usually. It's the socials that they follow are people that, as you mentioned, live off credit, live off loans, you know, or rent a fancy car and a fancy watch for a day and bling it out, and you think, wow, this looks spectacular, look at this guy, I want to be like him. Meantime, back at the ranch, and we've discussed this many times, you know, it isn't what the picture is. That person's living in debt, or that person is not making ends meet because they aren't actually living that life. It's just a perception that you see and that they want you to see. You know, and a lot of companies out there do the same. They create a perception for people to get caught up in this instead of playing the long game. And the investments are the same. Your investments is something that, yes.
You plant it, it has to grow, right? You just can't harvest all the time.
So there's always certain things that you must be for the long term. And again, there is room for short-term investing as well and understanding that, you know, and day trading and all those beautiful things. But first get the basics in place. Once we have that simple basics in place, then we can take it forward.
You know, JP, you've been in this game for 20 years now, and you write actively, you're thought leadership for a number of different publications. One of the things that I really like about Capitec and the show and just powering these conversations is their commitment to financial inclusion and financial literacy. Over the years, how have you seen financial institutions become more integrated, entrenched, and passionate about financial inclusion, financial literacy? Like, talk me through how you've seen that grow over the years.
So we've seen a steady pickup of that over the years. If I take my humble beginnings right in the start, you know, there wasn't much of this and not something that I thought about either. I think a big shout out needs to go to the regulator in this regard as well, you know, the Financial Sector Conduct Authority, in terms of education and literacy and driving that from their side and how people look at it and consume it. Thinking of things like TCF, treating customers fairly, those implementations of those type of guidelines and regulations for the big corporates. Mm. So I think that is driven largely the fact that we see more education, more literacy come out. Mm. It's going to get even bigger. We've got the COFI bill coming. Yes. It's being discussed. Further to that, you know, is the education and literacy discussions that's going out there. And again, it's around giving product-free education and literacy to people. So great that we see companies and we've seen a steady climb and we see a steady work from the bigger corporates to educate their people, to give them better understanding of how their products work, provide them with tools, calculators, etc., you know, to use it. The one thing that we realize in the industry is that most people don't usually know how to use these tools and calculators.
So the resources are there, but not the education that simplifies it for them, right?
Correct.
Gotcha.
So usually we see someone that needs to intervene there. So, you know, a certified financial planner, again, can help you, you know, work those tools, for example, or, you know, engaging with those corporates, you know, can assist you there to understand the tools better. So there's a lot of tools out there. There's a lot of education out there. There's a lot of literacy out there. I think what is still a big bugbear or a big issue is your the way that people say it, you know, the way that we
the way you communicate.
Correct. So the way that we communicate with people out there, I think sometimes that's too high level or too jargony, as they call it, too complex. You want to really simplify that, you know. So the more simple the literacy, the more simple the education, the better it's picked up by people and better understood by people. But you still need to actively also get involved with them. You know, you need to have people there that can show them how to use that education and literacy.
So empowerment through experiences, as opposed to, hey, here's a tool, go check it out yourself.
Skin in the game.
Skin in the game.
Skin in the game.
And that's incredible, JP. And you know, these conversations serve to empower people through simplicity and dismantling all of that complexity, which is a black box of finance. Because as someone as experienced as you would agree, there is no single right answer in personal finance. It's personal, right? 100%. So many ways to get there.
100%. So, and like I said from the beginning, you know, we all have different objectives. We all have different dreams. We all have different visions for ourselves of the future. No one is the same. No one. So even though, you know, we all work with money, we got brought up differently. Psychological, you know, as they call them, money scripts and those type of things that happened with us over the years actually ingrain how we act with money, how we interact with money, how we think about money, how we...
Our emotions around it.
Correct. And how we engage our relationships with people around money. Mm. You know, and again, that needs to be 100%, as you say, it's a massive black box. You know, everyone's different. One size fits all doesn't necessarily always cut the cheese. You know, everyone's different. We need to look at you in isolation almost, understand what your goals, dreams, objectives are, and then build everything around that.
100%. Personalization.
100%, dude. Personalized outcomes.
JP, thank you so much for sharing your insights and wisdom. We covered so much in such a short space of time. Such an incredible episode. It's so great to have you and look forward to chatting with you again soon.
Thank you. Appreciate it.